Hello and welcome to another episode of Business and Stuff. Today we've got a fantastic guest. Her name is Belle Niebuhr, and she is a lady of many titles. In fact, she is a consultant, a coach, digital marketer, and the editor and chief of African Vibes magazine. So welcome to the podcast, Belle. If you'd like to introduce yourself, sort of tell people about yourself. So many titles, many titles. I guess it, entrepreneur is the key title, is it?
Yeah. You know, I'm a woman of many interests, right? I unfortunately cannot fit myself into one box. I do have a, you know, business called African Yubora, which is an umbrella for my different businesses. So African Yubora is a digital media and marketing company that supports small businesses to effectively compete in a global economy. I do coach, I do consult, and I do many other things.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you're originally from Cameroon. I know that you're sort of passionate about promoting Africa, you know, sort of building self-sufficiency on the continent, and really sort of celebrating the culture and the tradition, you know, the tradition and you know, the rich history that Africa has. And I guess that's the reason really for the magazine, isn't it? Sort of celebrating Africa and the culture and everything like that. So yeah, tell me a little bit about your story. Obviously originally from Cameroon and you're now in the States. Tell me a little bit about your journey and sort of how you got started as an entrepreneur.
Right. So I came to the United States as a teenager, and in that impressionable age, you know, trying to identify myself with something that was uplifting and positive, right? You come from Africa. Africa is not perfect. Cameroon wasn't perfect, but it had its good, had its challenging. But from my teenage eyes, I didn't think it was a bad place. I knew it was a place that had areas that needed improvement, and I have many beautiful memories of my childhood. And when I came into the US and becoming a little bit more aware about how, you know, Africa as a whole was being represented, it was quite depressing. It was depressing to see that the sides of where I was from that were beautiful were just not getting attention. The only attention was the poverty, the war, the strife. And, you know, while those were true, those were part of a story. They were not the entire story. And I remember thinking to myself, somebody needs to be covering the other side, the fashion, the food, the culture, the people, the essence, you know, the beauty that's there. It's not all glamorous, but it's there. You know, growing up, I used to play in the rain freely with other kids, just little carefree things that we did, and there was just none of that. So at some point I kept thinking somebody should be covering this, and I realized I always have this saying, nobody's coming. We're the solutions that we want to see in the world. Where you see a gap, it's up to you to close it. I had never done anything in the media before, nothing. I just decided I was going to brave it my own tiny little way. Because I felt like if I kept waiting for somebody else to do, what if that person never came? And so I started the African Vibes magazine. As part of my master's program, that's the capstone project that I presented. And I got a lot of encouragement from there. So I did it as a print publication without experience. I jumped right in, you know, figuring it out as I went. And then had some setbacks along the way. Setbacks were more personal. The business itself was taken up, but they said it was a huge, you know, undertaking for someone without experience. And then I started a family and I just could not keep up with all of it at the time. And so I went to back to a corporate job and did the normal corporate journey here in the US and excelled there. It was just too easy for me. And I realized, for personality like myself, we're not meant to be confined into the humdrum of the corporate predefined culture. We're supposed to lead, we're supposed to create. At least that's my personality, just cannot, even within the corporate structure, that part of me came up. It was hard for me to just you give me all the leadership roles, I'll excel. And then I needed more, and then I'll jump into other areas, and I was just fixing and fixing. And at some point I realized I need to build my own thing. I need to go back to the things that are important to me. And it's never just one thing. So I've gone back and I'm continuing with the African vibes. I now have a digital marketing and media company. And then I pursue my other interests, and they've all taken a life of their own.
And that's the great thing, really, about today and being an entrepreneur, that you can do so many different things and you can explore so many different interests as well. And it's interesting you said, working in a corporate job and then sort of moving to having the magazine and also a marketing company. You have your digital marketing company. And I saw that you do quite a few talks, and one of those talks, or one of the sort of subjects of those talks, was around sort of the mindset shift that you have to have, mm-hmm. going from being, in a corporation to then becoming the boss of a six or seven figure business. I mean, just for the listeners, people who are keen to become an entrepreneur, keen to start a business and to be a business person, What would you say are some of the key tips, or what sort of mindset do they need to do that, as you talk about sort of a mind shift?
Yeah, that is my belief, is the biggest area that any entrepreneur needs to really focus on fixing is their mindset. It doesn't seem that way. When you start a business, you're worrying about, okay, the plan and, finding clients. But the biggest roadblock you're going to encounter, it's going to start in your mind. It's belief. It's believing that you can do it, whether it's a business, whether it's climbing. It's not even just an entrepreneur's Achilles heel that they have to constantly, deal with. It is whether you're in a corporate setting, regardless of what part of the world you're in, if you're not tackling the barriers that sometimes we're not placed by you, but by your, they're replaced there by experience, by the people around you, you will constantly find that you may be moving forward, one step forward, but then you'd move 10 steps back. And so when I'm coaching clients or even for myself, I found that the biggest area that I need to invest in is that. That's why I have a coach. So I coach and I have a coach, because that guarding your mind is a huge deal. So I'd say, if you wanted to pursue entrepreneurship, for those of your listeners that may be looking into this area, your first thing is to start asking yourself, who are the people around me? Are the people that would cultivate and encourage an entrepreneurial mindset, a growth mindset? Or are the people that project their own limiting beliefs on me? And a lot of people I talk to, their immediate community are not people that could see their vision. And not that they don't love them, as a matter of fact, because they love them so much, they try to talk them out of their dreams, which can be very discouraging. And so you have to find a tribe. The beauty is, we are in a time right now where it's easier to find a tribe. When I started my first go at doing a publishing company, it was not easy to find a tribe. You where do you even begin? Where do you find mentors or like-minded people? Today, the distance is between you and a Facebook group. There are Facebook groups everywhere. There are meetups everywhere that you could find a community that would support your thinking. So I'll say the first big thing is that. The second is, you have to have an idea that people actually, you have to be solving a problem that people actually have. And a lot of entrepreneurs, they fall in love with their first idea. Whereas from my perspective, and I don't know about you, Pierre, but my experience and my perspective has always been that we start from somewhere. We don't always know where it's going to end, but we have an idea of where we want to go. And then we let the data drive how we go about it. And what do I mean by the data? So if I said today, okay, I want to start a coaching business, and then I go out there and I look for people for the problem that I think I can help them with, I start listening. I start asking questions. I start finding out, do they really have that problem? And in listening, I find out sometimes that the problem I thought people were going to be having is not quite the problem, or the problem I thought I wanted to solve is not the problem I wanted to solve. but I'm open to what the data tells me, whether it's running a Facebook ad, whether it's me doing cold calls to learn about my market. I do this in many different ways. I always listen and I let the community I'm reaching out to inform me of what I need to, how I need to serve them. And I use this approach in all my businesses. We follow the data, not we're not tied to, we're not married to an idea. We let our clients lead us to how they need their problem solved or what problem they find most pressing that they need to solve.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people, like you say, they have an idea and you know, they set that in stone, and you know, when it fails or perhaps it doesn't quite go the way that they anticipated, you know, they stop, and really, a business, a good business at least, should definitely evolve, and certainly the input from, you know, potential prospects and also customers and the people around that look at the business. You know, I think it's really important to kind of evolve. I think if you're set in your way and you sort of carve something out in stone, and you know, there's no view to change anything, to adapt to a market that you're creating or a market that you're fitting into, it's definitely a roadblock, isn't it? But if you're willing to adapt and find the market, you know, by really going with the flow of the you know, of the customer, I think that's a really good point. And I like as well, I had a bit of a search, and I was looking at some of your stuff online before this, and you did a video, and it's titled Just Start, which I really like, because you know, that is actually one of the biggest problems that a lot of people have, isn't it? They're perhaps in a very fortunate position to be able to actively pursue their ambitions, and to, you know, start a business. Perhaps, you know, they have a bit of money saved, and they've decided that, you know, now is the time, and yet they don't. And I think it comes down to fear, and I think it's that mindset, like you say, people perhaps bringing them down, people around them that perhaps don't think in the same way. And you know, they might be looking to protect you, but sometimes you do need to reach out and to have a coach. And it's interesting, actually. I heard the expression, and well, I was sort of told, why is business anything different to sports or to music? And if you look at, you know, the top tennis people, the top people in golf and football, and even in music, you know, the likes of Michael Jackson back in the day, one of the greatest artists of all time, in my opinion, he had a vocal coach, and yet he has one of the most amazing voices. So, you know, and business is no different, is it? And that's why, you know, people really need a coach to kind of help them on the way. So that's really interesting. Yeah, definitely. Also, I saw, when I was sort of reading up a little bit about yourself, that you know, obviously you're keen to sort of promote Africa, and sort of, you know, building self-sufficiency in the continent there. And you sort of describe the colonial hangover. I mean, tell me, you know, in your kind of view, how things are sort of changing, because there is a lot of things changing, and I'm very interested in a lot of the emerging markets, and Africa really is one of those, you know, for technology, for innovation. There's a lot happening now. I mean, give me your view around some of the innovations and perhaps some of the things that are happening in Africa now, which is, you know, changing things around and having them positioned more as a future leader in some industries.
Right, so you have a continent with the youngest youth population in the world, right? Now, we're at a very unique and very exciting time where information has been democratized in the sense that I can sit here in the United States and I'm talking to you, you're in the in Europe. And I could read your listen to your podcast. Someone in Kenya or South Africa now has access to information that they never had before. But do they know that they have this access? Are they aware of, you know, the opportunity that's presented to them? Some are. And when you look at the changes that are coming from Africa, as Africans get on board, as more and more countries, communities, you know, make access to the internet more possible. You know, Google, a couple of years ago, they were doing the balloons in East Africa to make it so that people can easily get onto the internet. It's like opening up a new world. And we're going to see incredible changes as a result of this. However, there are other major challenges that still have to overcome. And I believe one of the biggest challenges that Africans would have to confront is a mindset challenge. You have so many people on the continent that have been trained to think, and I was not very different. You know, first, if you see somebody wealthy, you know, you look at it as a negative thing. And so there's that. And then there's the over-religiosity of the of people on the continent, and everything is something pure luck and magical and not necessarily out of hard work, because when you're growing in some of the countries where people don't earn things, there, you know, it's connections that get your head and things like that. People lose faith in any process. However, we're now at a time where if you have a computer and you're able to access the internet, you can work, you can earn a living income. As a matter of fact, I have people on my team from different parts of the world. There are people from, you know, Zimbabwe. You would probably interact with my assistant. She's in Zimbabwe. I have people on my team from Kenya, from Nigeria. You know, there are people from South Africa, from the Philippines, and we're all working together. So this is a very unique time. And so Africans are no longer just limited by the jobs that their governments can create, especially African youth. Now they can create employment for themselves as long as they have access to the internet. Now they can go to Khan Academy and educate themselves for free. Now they could tap into coding platforms and learn to code and build apps. And we're seeing apps emerging, all kinds of conferences and seminars and events encouraging this kind of behavior, which is very exciting. It's putting Africans in a position where they can solve African problems. And of course, you have some of these major silicon giants who recognize that Africa is indeed the new frontier. And if you're not having presence there, if you're not coming in early on, you will miss out. And so there's that tech, I would call it the tech scramble as well. And so it's Africans' opportunity to lose. And now is the time for positioning. And I think for me, the exciting part, especially with a media outlet where we get to tell these stories, is seeing that evolution happen real time. It's happening so quickly, just as quickly as there was no Facebook, you know, one time, and then boom, there was Facebook, and it just grew to this thing that I'm sure even, you know, Zuckerberg himself could not have envisioned. So we're all seeing the world evolve at a pace that is nosebleed fast, because we are interconnected, because information is readily available and in overwhelming quantities. It's, you have a question today, you Google it and you get the answer. That's the world's brain. It's right there available to you. So there pretty much hardly any limits. Now, do some countries make this difficult by censoring the internet? Yes. And some of that comes because with great freedoms come great responsibility. Countries are now realizing that this very powerful tool called social media, for example, can be used to topple governments. It can be, before, power was held by a few, right? You had a lot of money and you were this elite group that had all the power and all the influence. Today, somebody who has no dollars can become an influencer by just putting themselves out there. And that influence, they could use it to move people, to move masses of people to action. We saw it in Nigeria with the NSARS, where, you know, the Nigerian police did not really anticipate that, you know, the uprising would have that kind of global impact. Or even here in the US with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. We're in very different times. And Africa is positioned to benefit from this And I see that, you know, people on the continent, and not just on and out of the continent, are taking advantage to tap into this, to address challenges and build areas that have for so long been neglected. But then not everybody is privy to this, and not everybody has adapted to this mindset that they can be in the driver's seat. And I see that also as a limitation that in our own little way, my own little way, that we have to tackle head on.
Definitely, yeah, I think there's a lot of change going on. I think the internet is probably the biggest factor in that, isn't it? You know, it gives so many people across the world access to education and to knowledge and also freedom in many ways, because like you say, you can socially reach out and connect to people and inspire people, and I think technology is really going to take us forward, and I, you know, I do see a lot of huge potential in Africa, and some of the companies that I work with in terms of the tech side of our business, you know, they're all investing very, very heavily in Africa, and see it as a huge sort of leader, you know, in the coming years. So yeah, it's very powerful in that respect. I think, you know, there is, you know, always going to be that sort of power challenge between sort of freedom and capitalism, you know, people becoming entrepreneurs and so forth, and then government, because unfortunately, you know, governments in many ways do like to have control and to control their people, and I think, you know, hopefully the internet is giving people that freedom to, you know, to change their lives and you know, to better their lives as well. So that's a good thing. But I guess there is, like you say, sort of challenges, you know, in the road. But lots and lots of positivity and hope for the future, certainly. I mean, it's interesting actually. You touched on you know, your team and your sort of global team of employees, or sort of maybe freelancers, I'm not sure. And one of the topics actually you talk about, which is really quite nice because it syncs really well with myself. When I started, in fact, when I started my business, I think it was about 7 years ago now, I actually started as a freelancer, and I assume it's probably, you know, similar with yourself, maybe in terms of your marketing agency.
Yes.
And something that you talk about actually is well, it's a few things. It's first of all, it's how to utilize freelancers to sort of as leverage, you know, to really scale on a budget. And then also another point that you talk about is how to go from being a solo sort of entrepreneur to having a team, and you know, you mentioned that that's possible sort of within 90 days. So yeah, I mean, how did you start in terms of your business then? I mean, perhaps more so with the marketing agency you have, and how have you grown your team, and how is that perhaps relative to other businesses, perhaps freelancers out there with in a similar position, perhaps working as a freelancer or a small business? How do you see kind of using freelancers or using the freelance economy, and you know, the internet? How do you see that as a real positive to allow people to grow their business?
Right. So I did, when I was getting into the marketing side of things, I certainly started as a freelancer, and I still do some freelancing now and then because it's a great way to test the market, right? So you say you want to start this marketing thing and you're trying to carve out your niche. There are all kinds of, when people hear digital marketing, for example, it seems like it's this one thing, but it has so many disciplines within it, and I had to decide which direction I wanted to go. I didn't want to be, you know, everywhere, try to master from Facebook advertising to social media management to content marketing to search engine optimization. I mean, there were just so many different directions. But I wanted to get a sense of what people were needing. So I started freelancing and then feeling my way around what clients I wanted to work with. But to the question about, you know, leveraging freelancers, having walked in those shoes, I realized, you know, it is good to find what is the thing, not necessarily that you're best at or good at, but the thing you enjoy doing the most. And then the things you don't enjoy doing or that you're not the best at, find somebody that is really good at doing it, and then have them join you, and then you grow together. You'll be giving somebody else opportunity, but then you'll be able to focus your attention in the area that you enjoy, then you continue enjoying growing your business. So that is how I started looking at it. And so my background is in systems. So one of the first things that I did was setting up an initial, it wasn't perfect, but I kind of set up an initial, system so that I could bring somebody on board and manage it and not lose my head in the process. So because a lot of people, and again, I see this with my clients, they want to bring people on board, but they have no structure. And so instead of reducing overwhelm, they just scale up the overwhelm because now you not only have to manage the work in front of you, you have to manage another human being, and have them, come into your space. And so, I've seen people start, they try to hire somebody and then it's way more work, it's costing the money and it's not helping, then they let the person go, but they need the help. They just don't have the structure to have that help. So I've been working on my systems. I still work on my systems, but slowly but surely, I just give out the pieces of my business that even if I could do really great, that I don't feel like working on, so that I can only focus on the things that I enjoy doing. So I outsource in that way. And one of the things that was very important to me when I started, still is I wanted to build the kind of company that I've always wanted to work for. Now, I've worked for some great companies, but they were just never the kind of company I wanted to work for. So the kind of company I wanted to work for was a company that can nurture an entrepreneurial spirit. So I'm not big on necessarily saying I need somebody as an employee, that too, but I like the idea that my team is actually freelancers. They are business people, but we operate as a team. I still take, because I did lead technology for a Fortune 500 company. So I did take all of that. I do still create a sense of community with my freelancers. We operate, if you're in our, we have meetings, we have fun together. You would think everybody on my team was an actual employee full time, but they're independent business people. And it's not an easy thing to cultivate, but it was very important to me so that they still have that sense that they could take on other projects that they found exciting. At the same time, they have the flexibility to stay on, and it's my job to keep them interested enough to stay with me. It's their job to deliver value so that I also see that value. So we have this mutual understanding that we've been growing together with. But that's kind of how I've been doing it little by little for all my businesses, whether it's the media businesses, building a team of writers. The beauty of that is, you are able to try people out. And of course, you have to have a system. It's always back to the system, back to the system, back to the system, because you need a system that you're able to bring people in. And if they're not the right fit, which doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them, they may just not be the right fit for your business, you could transition them out and find the right fit. It's like a dance that you're looking for the people, you're trying to piece together this puzzle. And when the puzzle is pieced together, or this, it's like putting together music, right? When your people are, composers are putting together music, you need to find the right notes. And that's how I look at my team, is I need to find the right people for all, us to build this incredible vision together. And we have to be, they have to be sold into it. And some people don't get sold at the beginning. For them, it's just a job. And then I work them, I coach my team, I coach them as if they're my clients. And we grow together. But that's how I've been doing it, is trying to find the right people. And I've found that it's easier to do it when you're dealing with freelancers, the overhead. And not to say that I won't eventually get actual employees, there are things that I would want for that, for the people to be an actual employee. But I've loved how my freelance team operates. It's kind of the model that I'd always hoped to create.
Excellent. I think definitely what you said at the very beginning, that a lot of people do struggle bringing people on board, and one of the challenges they have is having to then sort of manage these people that they bring on board. You know, they have what they need the person to work on, and you know, the job role, and they do need the support, but then they do find themselves managing that person and sometimes having to do it for the person to kind of show them how to do it. I mean, any tips for people out there, like yourself, you know, like me, for example, you know, who do utilize, you know, bringing people on board in a virtual capacity or as a freelancer? How do you manage people? So you talk about system. Is that something that you built, or is it is there a platform? What sort of tools and what advice do you have for people? And maybe what questions would you ask those people that you bring on board? You know, how do you manage them? What are some good tips for people to make sure they're getting the best value for money effectively from their staff, but also at the same time keeping them happy as well?
Right. So, what I normally do is when I've identified a gap I want to fill, so I look at, and it never starts perfectly, but I map out, because I do this for some clients. It's actually one of the main things I do for my consulting is putting together a process that would ease the entrepreneur out of the business so that they can now bring on either a virtual assistant and so on. So what I normally do is I map out a process, right? So let's just take my social media team. So I had a way I was doing my social media, and of course you've seen I have different brands. There was just no way. And so I identified, okay, these are all the social media things that that I would like to see happen. I came up with a very high level plan and that. And I thought, okay, we need a place where we will be putting the plan. I need a way to be able to review and approve this plan. I need a way to know that the task of creating content has been done. So I just mapped what are the things that need to happen before I would want somebody that wasn't me posting on any one of my brand platforms, right? So I loosely map that plan. And then I have I've tried different tools. Right now, I'm using Monday.com. It's not my favorite tool. And I'm sorry, Monday, if you're listening to this, but it works. But it's efficient. I used to use Trello. Trello was just did not work right for my business. And so when I go now and I hire a freelancer, I onboard them. So first I teach them about who I am, what the brand is about. I get them, understanding what we're trying to accomplish. And then we have so they get, here's what you'll be doing every day and a schedule, but they manage your tasks on Monday. And we have a whole process where, okay, when you finish with this step, you need me to review, you set the status. I'm able to carve time just to do my review. So I have a whole, I use tools like, there are all kinds of task management tools. Some people use Trello, which is efficient depending on your, my business is a little bit more complex because I have many moving parts. So I needed something a little bit more robust, which is why we moved to Monday. But Trello is just as efficient. So if you were bringing on a new person, you would want to create like, which Trello is free, like, a Trello board to say, okay, here are the tasks you need to do when you finish with this, move it to this. So we kind of know where things are. You want to be able to know where's the status. You want to be able to come in and respond to something without being pinged all the time, right? So I don't want somebody to say, I finished this piece, come review, and they start emailing me. I don't want that. So I have things like that built into a process. So I would say the very first step is to map out a process for your team, or for whoever you're trying to hire. If it's someone to manage your content creation, you would have to start with, okay, where idea, who comes up with the idea? Is it you? Okay, when you've come up with the idea, how do you communicate with that person so they know that the idea is ready for them to maybe do a draft? So you do that baton passing and you map it all out. And then you start saying, okay, without me having to be texted or emailed, where can I go to know the status of this thing? Whether it's Trello you're using, Monday, Asana, Google Sheets, there are all kinds of tools. You have a place where you want to have a place as an entrepreneur where you go to know, okay, all these five things are things I need to respond to. You don't want that outside of your system. So that's how I do it. I always start with mapping a process, documenting the process, and then we start tweaking. So it never has to be perfect, but we map it, we start using it, we adjust. We start using it, we adjust. Like I said earlier, I always let the data inform the action, right? So with my team, when I hired, you know, I have different people managing different parts of social media, and you know, when they first come, I give them a plan, but then I inform them, we'll use the plan, then you now have to start coming up with the plan, and I just give feedback. They do your research, they come with the plan, I coach them, I guide them, they go do it, I look at their mistakes, I correct, we build it into the process, and it just keeps getting better and better and better. But you have to have that kind of system. You can leverage tools to help you so that you have a set time when you're looking at things. Otherwise, when I first started, what I used to do was, you know, I just hire somebody. I'm like, okay, here's what you need to do. And then every minute, oh, I'm stuck here. I have a question. They text me, they email me in the middle of the night. I'm trying to figure it out. Tell them the next thing. We're not tracking it. It's all over the place. And then I'm like, oh, I know they needed me to do something, but it's in an email somewhere. And then I'm getting all these emails. It was just overwhelming. I would say one of the first things that any entrepreneur needs before to bring anybody on board, you actually need it, even if you're solo, is a task management system. You need even the most basic, even for your tasks, just to say you're a solopreneur, you're just by yourself. You have a tool where you put the things that you're going to be doing, when, why, what the impact. You have to first have at least something that you use to manage your work before you're even bringing somebody on board.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's about organization, isn't it? You know, I mean, I absolutely live and breathe in my calendar. You know, I put everything in my calendar. You know, my sort of my agenda, my diary for each day is you know super long, and I use every window of time. And then I also have you know schedules for campaigns and stuff as well. So yeah, definitely, I agree with that. You know, it's about making sure that you're sort of managing the tasks and that efficiently. Another thing actually that sort of links to that, I know that you're big on sort of helping small businesses to automate, or you know, to use automation to grow. I assume that you kind of when you're looking at automation, you're looking maybe sort of digitally, in terms of the sort of digital marketing realm. What are some of the things, and because I'm also very much about automation in the business, you know, both from you know email marketing perspective, but also down to you know things like having a CRM system that makes you aware to email this person, you know, to have everything kind of synced so that a lot of the business is sort of running autonomously. What sort of tools are you using, and what sort of tips and advice are you giving small businesses to better sort of automate their business for growth?
Right. So that's a great question, because a lot of times when I'm sitting with an entrepreneur, they're at the stage where it's time for money. And I still do that too. That's when you coach, you consult, it's your time for money, right? I do that because I enjoy it, but it's not the most efficient model, because there's just one of you. And so usually when I sit with a client, the next level we start thinking about is, how do we scale this, right? How do we productize their knowledge or service? Once we've identified, for some people, it may be a course, it may be group coaching to transition themselves slowly out of the one-on-one type of time-based servicing of their clients. And for some, it's just building that team. We identify key processes that are needed. You already started pointing out the typical key ones. Do they have a sales process? Do they have a CRM to manage that sales process? Do they have an onboarding process? Do they have some kind of funnel, right? So at some point, funnel even for me became a dirty word, because everybody was throwing it around. It sounded like this magic bullet. You create a funnel and boom, all of a sudden you're a millionaire, which was so misleading. I felt bad for some of my clients. Say, oh, I just need a funnel. I'm like, oh no, it's not that magical. You know, it's still something you will have to test, but it's a great way to start getting to that automation, where you now map your client's customer journey. When you kind of know what products and services you want to sell, then you map their journey, and then you set up your funnel to help you scale your communication. Because I really have to bring it home to my clients. to see what it really is okay, when I speak to them one-on-one, it's me and them. I can react and respond to things that they say, but that's not scalable. I can't have, 100, 200 conversations with people in a day. But if I was putting out blog posts, my social media posts, I'm able to have different kinds of conversations. And how I do that is I put a post, people may comment, people may respond, I may send them something, all of that, it gets automated. So they get either a lead magnet or something that it shows them, because starts kind of teases them into who I am and what I know. And then they get into this thing, and we can start an email automated communication that is scaling that person's voice and authority. But for that to happen, you kind of need that automation set up. You kind of need a way to be testing to see, okay, am I connecting? Am I converting these people? So those are, I would say, you absolutely need to have a CRM for your sales process. You want to have a marketing automated, and it would not all be automated, but you kind of want to have an inbound marketing strategy, and you can layer paid on top of it. Most of the time when people start out, I say don't do paid yet. Do just the organic version where you're either on social media or on your blog, just communicating and then having people, get into your funnels that way so that you kind of see what's resonating, because it's when you've found that you're truly connecting with your target client, then you can now add, or at least that's my perspective, you can now, accelerate that with using ads. But there are different levels of automation, even with your onboarding, that can be automated. So I look at it from different, like almost like pillars, right? You have the sales, you have the marketing, you have the operations where you're onboarding, you have the follow-ups that you do with your existing clients. And then when you finish the client engagement, reaching out to see if you can get some referrals from them. All of that can have levels of automation that help a small business to scale without completely breaking the bank.
Definitely, yeah, I like that. Yeah, there's certainly. I mean, I see it with a lot of companies I talk to, that there are different stages of the business. Like you say, there's the the business development element, where they're trying to find business. There's the delivery or the sort of the product of, giving the product to the customer, and then there's sort of reservicing and sort of making sure that the client's interested in staying on board with the service or interested in buying new services, and that sort of all those different stages. Like you say, there's automation, there's things that people can that can can do within those stages to make things more efficient. And it's interesting, actually. I think when you do introduce people to tools that help them to be more efficient and to automate elements of their business, it can have a major effect. I mean, I, for example, I've seen companies go from turning over $800,000, well, probably pounds, but I'm talking dollars, obviously, as an equivalent, a year to then turning over 8 million. And so it's a 10x from there, so 10 times. And it's really just because, for example, with sales, like you say, a lot of people will do things like cold calling and everything like that, which is absolutely paramount to driving business. But if you do create these sales funnels whereby you're engaging with people to the point that they reach out to you, you're generating leads, and then you connect with them. If you're doing all these activities in the background, you're sort of making things so much easier. And it's automating it, isn't it? And so yeah, it's a really powerful way of thinking. And I'm all for sort of automation. Brilliant, yeah. And I really kind of wanted to touch on something else, which I've done so in the last few podcasts. I tend to ask guests about books. Is there any books that have inspired you? Any books that you would tell listeners to go and buy or to check out, that have inspired you, or that there's some key messages in them that they might be able to take and put into their business or into their life?
Wow, I'm a book addict. And
Yeah.
funny things, I should probably always be prepared for this question. And every time I'm asked, I'm like, huh. Then after the call, I'm like, oh my gosh, I should have said this book, that book, because I'm a book addict. And I have a little in my office. I have a mini library, and we have books everywhere because I love actually buying. I know some people think physical books are not in anymore, but I'm one of those. I have to have. I get the audio. I get the Kindle version, and I get the, actual print version for my home library. I would say just coming to mind right now, and I know I'm probably missing one of my favorites for sure, but I would say some books that that I really like. There's this book I'm drawing a blank for the name of the author, but a book that really did some that was very impactful for me last year was The Big Leap. And I cannot remember who the author is. That is a it's a great book about mindset. The Big Leap, Gay Hendricks. So conquer your hidden fear and take life to the next level. That is a book that was introduced to me by a coach I had last year, and I just thought, wow, that was a game-changing book on mindset. And you can tell by now that mindset is a big deal for me. Another book that was very transformative for me was 10X by Grant Cardone. It was just an incredible book for me because I remember that was the first time I read a book. And then I remember one day standing in my bathroom and just saying out loud what my dreams were. Dreams that I was scared for anybody to hear because I thought it was who was I to have these very ambitious, goals. I just didn't want anybody to hear them because I couldn't give myself permission to even think that I was someone that could or that could pull something off like that. So 10X, he kind of really, I like his style. He's no nonsense, no excuses. Again, I'm one of those. I'm not a, soft gloves, gentle, a touch person. I'm very, hard, to the point. We'll call it out for what it is. We'll go in there. I have my moments of nurturing, but it's usually let's do this, let's go, let's get it, So I normally have a, I'm drawn to authors that do that kind of talk. So Grant Cardone is one of those. Another author that does that kind of, no nonsense is oh gosh, now I can't remember his name, but You Can't Hurt Me by, oh gosh.
Is he the army guy?
Yes,
Yeah.
David Goggins. David Goggins, yes. His book, I mean, I have it in audio, bought it in print. Again, it's not for the people that are, whose sensibilities get easily offended, but I find his book very inspiring because I like his way of thinking about life. It's no excuses. And that is my attitude. Whether things are going tough, I have to tell myself that I can fix it. There's no, I used to say to people, nobody's coming. We are the solution we're seeking. So even when I get stuck, and as an entrepreneur, you will get stuck, you will feel discouraged, you will get down. His book kind of reminds me that I haven't bottomed out even when I'm at my lowest, that I could still pick myself back up because this guy picked himself up from all kinds of setbacks. And so that's a book that I really go back to remind me that that my limits, I have not yet gotten to my limit. I am not there yet. And there's still one more. There's always that one more step, one more thing that I could be doing. And that really gets me through. So those I would say just from the top of my head. And again, I know I'm going to think, no, I didn't mention this and that because I have a ton of books that I love, but I would say those are some of my favorites.
Brilliant. That's some good ones there. Definitely Grant Cardone's book 10X is really good. I love the way that he uses the concept of 10X in sort of every element of business and lifestyle, whether it's relationships. He talks about kind of giving your 10X to get the best out of your relationship, all the way through to, in business, kind of, giving the maximum. And like you say, a lot of people will dream or have a goal, and he says to to think one bigger than that, you know, and to 10x what you, the very top goal that you have, 10x it and go even bigger. Because I think his way of thinking is, if you, you know, if you do shoot for the moon, you'll end up amongst the stars. I mean, that's a cliche kind of statement, but that's the kind of concept that he goes along with that. And yeah, he's really interesting. He's in the kind of the sales world, sort of not dissimilar to myself. So yeah, and yeah, very, very, very good book, and some good suggestions there. In terms of people that perhaps influence you, or maybe heroes that you've got, maybe in the media, maybe like, say, like authors, it could be someone sort of in history, you know, is there any standout individuals that you would say they inspire you, you know, people that you look up to and people that you'd like to emulate or to sort of work towards sort of being similar to?
Yeah, I do have, I have heroes, you know, people that I look at for different reasons or listen to for different reasons, like Tony Robbins. I like a lot about his philosophy about how to approach productivity in life. Elon Musk, I like that he approaches business outside, thinking outside of the box. I really admire people who are not phased. Not that they're not phased. They feel the fear. They get challenged, but they do the think outside the box anyway. They still go in and they, you know, as Brené Brown will put it, daring greatly. They dare greatly. They really step out. So Jeff Bezos would be another person that I have a lot of admiration for. I mean, I have a lot of people, Oprah Winfrey, that I admire for different things, for being people that saw, they didn't see ceilings where everybody saw a ceiling or where everybody saw a limit. They didn't see those as limits. They just saw them as barriers that they just needed to break through. And that inspires me a lot.
And a question as well that I did a talk recently, and it was something that I sort of brought myself back to thinking. And so I'd like to ask the sort of similar question to you. And that was putting yourself into the position of being, you know, if you could go back in time to your younger self, you know, maybe 12, 15, you know, at some point in your life when you're growing up, maybe it's quite a poignant time, what would you say to yourself? Is there any advice, any reassuring notes that you might sort of tell yourself? Is there any advice? And I guess this speaks to any of the younger listeners who perhaps are thinking about what they can do in life, you know, whether they want to be an entrepreneur, whether they should go after their passion and try to reach their goal. Is there any sort of good bits of advice that you would give to your younger self and to, of course, any younger listeners that are listening to the podcast?
I would, if I could go back to my younger self, I would say just start, because I was, for some time in my life, there were things I wanted, but I was waiting for this great inspiration or this divine reaction or action or sign to tell me when the right time was to just start. Of course, that never comes. You get your inspiration in motion. So you don't always, yes, you might sometimes get this move to take action, but sometimes it is the action that triggers more action, meaning more inspiration to continue taking action. And I wish I had started much sooner and stayed with things much longer. So if I had to go back, I would say start, learn, adapt, adjust, and continue. Don't be afraid. Don't wait for permission. I was always waiting for, whether it's family or friends or for people around me, to be okay with my decisions, not realizing that it was not for them to be okay because they couldn't see it the way I saw it. Some tried to because they loved me and they wanted to support, but they just couldn't see because it was not their dream to see. Instead of folding or letting that, become the driving force or the guide of what was next, I should have just stayed with the course, knowing and trusting that the dots, as Steve Jobs would say, the dots always connect backwards. For everything that I've accomplished in my life, now I stand where the accomplishment has happened, and I look back at the failures and all the times I was doubting myself. And I'm so grateful for those times because those were the times where I pivoted, and it was in that pivoting that I ended up having success.
Definitely. No, I really like that. I think that's true. A lot of people, they're looking for a sign, aren't they? They're looking for something to kind of reach out to them and to speak to them, to really motivate them to do something in their life or to find that path. And actually that voice or that sort of inspiration is inside of all of us, isn't it? And we it's only when we get started, like you say, that we realize that the person that should inspire us the most is actually ourselves. And through sort of getting started and doing that, we learn what we're capable of. And I think that's a really nice message. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. So if listeners who are wanting to reach out to you to perhaps do some coaching with you, or maybe they're a business wanting some digital marketing, or they're sort of interested in working with you in some capacity, and perhaps they're sort of interested in knowing more about the magazine as well. And what are some of the main channels or platforms that they can reach out to you on? And how can they do that?
First of all, Pierre, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. For those that may want to connect, I am on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. Those are the main platforms that I use to connect with people. And my handle is the same on all of them. It's at Bellniba, Bellenniba. Bellniba. So on all the platforms, you will find me that way. I also have a website, www.bellniba.com. So hopefully I'll get to, connect. And just, it doesn't even have to be a client, just even with a question. I'm always grateful to connect with people and just meet new people.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being a guest with us today. And I think a lot of people could be very inspired by a lot of the messages that you have for them. So thank you very much for that. And thank you.